950 listeners, and a very warm welcome here to the Pet Connection Show here on AM 950 Radio, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to everybody, and lots of topics here to discuss with Dr. Nicole and I. My name is Kathy Menard, and I'm the host of Pet Connections and also the owner of the Urban Dog. And Dr. Nicole and I and a guest here will be having lots of different topics today. And one of them, for sure, pet appreciators, is going to be the importance of spaying and neutering. And another health topic that we want to address today is keeping your pet's paws clean. Now, I know that if you just heard the weather report, you know, it's going to be very hot and 100 degrees tomorrow and that kind of thing. But there's still, you know, our pets will still be going in and out for the rest of the summer, and how to keep their paws healthy as well. And pet appreciators, we will be having a guest in studio with us today, not so much to talk specifically about pet issues, but to talk about the relationship or the connection between wolves, actually, and dogs, and that connection, and not only the connection, but the time of point where it was sort of a breakaway, you know, a more defining point for dogs and a more defining point for wolves as well. So I think what we're going to do, for starters, pet appreciators, and if you want to get your pet journals out, I think the first thing that we're going to cover is just paw health. Again, they're going to be in and out with different types of weather, and obviously it's going to be super hot, so they won't be outside a lot today or tomorrow, hopefully. But there are different germs that can be tracked into our homes. You know, your paws of your dog or cat may not look dirty, but they can definitely be germ-filled. And so we're going to have Dr. Nicole talk a little bit about just keeping our paws clean and healthy for our home environments.
Absolutely. So, you know, the main thing I think with that is, you know, you look, the paws are not something that if you lift up and look underneath them, that's not something that a lot of owners will look at. But you certainly should, and you know, just kind of while they're laying there, just kind of flip them upside down and maybe push the fur down and look for things like that. In between the toes are actually a great hiding place for ticks. So you're going to want to make sure that you know, spread in between each toes, open them up, look for wood, look for ticks and things like that. That's also a place that they can, have little areas of redness or a brown discoloration from licking. So anytime you see kind of a brownish reddish color to the skin or the fur, that's obvious evidence that they've been licking there a lot. But when you're bringing their paws, or when you're bringing them in from outside, one of the main things is just make sure that you're either wiping them off with like a baby wipe or something like that. And the other day, actually, I was at one of the stores and I saw this amazing little paw cleaner that was, it looked brand new because my sister and I were both talking about having seen it that day. But it's kind of like a little container that you were maybe put a little mild soap and warm water in, and you push their little paw in there and it dries it as it comes out. So I thought that would be excellent for certain homes with the dogs that get messy outside versus, you know, I know for my black lab, it takes me a full towel to get her paws clean. And you want to make sure you're doing that, obviously, not only for the cleanliness of your home and your carpets and things like that, but, you know, paws can track in microscopic eggs, you know, parasitic eggs, things that you would never even imagine. So if there are children, you know, crawling around on the floor and your dog just comes running in, they can have those little eggs that no one can see on their paws. And then if a baby were to touch that and then put their hands in their mouth, they can get those worms as well. Same thing with cats. I mean, it's a little different. Cats are a little more fastidious and they don't generally go outside. Some do. But, you know, just always make sure that they don't have any, you know, debris or anything like that hanging from their paws when they're running around the house and things like that.
So what are some of the diseases that humans can actually contact from their pets just because their pets were outside?
Sure. Like a lot of parasitic infections, you know, roundworms, things like that. There are a lot of other parasites that you can actually get from your pet. And that's the scary thing with kids is that, you know, it's all fecal oral. So if the baby, you know, were to touch a small amount of stool on accident from the dog or something that was in between the dog's paws and then touch their mouth. You know, older kids too, if they're not washing their hands, they can certainly get roundworms and things like that. You know, there are a plethora of other things like Giardia, you know, leptospirosis, things like that, that, you know, we can get from our pets too. So you just want to make sure that they're up on their vaccines, you know, that they're clean when they come in the house, and that, you know, definitely that they're on some monthly heartworm prevention, because that's going to deworm them as well.
And I recently read too about a new spritz. It's a lemon cherry scent, I suppose, and you just spray it on your dog's paws, and it's supposed to, you know, naturally kill some of those germs too. So I don't know a lot about the product, but you can look it up at dirtydoglovers.com. Again, that's dirtydoglovers.com.
Cute.
And it is a new product, so if you're interested in trying something new, that might be an idea as well. There's been an awful lot in the news lately about children and pets in the home, and actually focusing on the health aspect of it, how infants and young children tend to be healthier, actually, with pets in the homes, dogs and cats. And but, you know, we wanted to obviously say yay for that. That was a good finding for us pet lovers.
Yes.
Who have children as well, and may put some worries or damper some of the worries of the parents. But there are other issues too. Two sides to everything. So we wanted to make sure, pet appreciators, that you knew some of the issues with that as well. And pet appreciators, our guest has recently walked in, and we are excited to have Dr. Maureen Hackett with us. Her name may be familiar to many of you AM 950 listeners. Her organization is Howling for Wolves, and the actual website is howlingforwolves.org. And she has done a tremendous amount of work bringing the attention to the wolves and some of the new legislation that has been discussed and laws, I think, that have passed at the state legislature But what I wanted to bring Maureen in today was to talk about just the connection between dogs and wolves and where that breakaway happened and some of the wonderful things that wolves actually have given to dogs in terms of some of the traits that help with service dogs, therapy dogs, that kind of thing. And just the different ways that we learn about our pets just by learning about another species, the wolves. So Dr. Maureen Hackett, I want to welcome you to the Pet Connection Show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I was about to actually interrupt about paws because I have an elderly cat. And they're not as fastidious when they get older.
Right.
And so what I have found is I actually gave him a room with a kitty box in it so that he doesn't have to go so far, because I've heard people talk about cats who are perfect for kitty habits but suddenly not being perfect. And it's like, you know, it's because they're getting old and they can't make it. But also you need to keep their paws clean to keep them from getting infections and keep their kitty litter really clean.
Yep.
Really helps. You watch for burn urine, from urine maybe being left if it's a real wet box or things like that. Anyway, so you want to keep that kitty box clean. I actually was hoping to forward to you a link.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping to put it in here and send it to
you. Oh,
there.
Well then let's go ahead and...
What's your email?
Well, I'd rather not...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, what I learned when I looked about, certainly wolves... in 2004, I did a wolf workshop in Yellowstone, and at that time, I had just gotten my first dog, and I was just so impressed with the films they showed us of the interaction between, for example, two wolves who are meeting for the first time. It looks very similar to two dogs meeting for the first time. They sort of go face to face. They look at each other, and they have certain behaviors of their tail. They have all of these behaviors that really look dog-like. I was reading this morning, though, that dogs depend a little more on visual cues maybe than wolves do. Wolves use a lot of other cues.
Like
ears up, ears down, tails between the legs, tails up, tails wagging, hackles up, hackles down. But the wolves probably use things like, howling for sure is is it a stranger howl? Is it a real howl? I don't really know all the behaviors of wolves, and I don't think we do too, but we do know that wolves have a pack and they do intermingle. A wolf will break off from a pack, or a few wolves will as the pack gets too large, and go and join another pack or form their own pack. And it's very interesting to see, will a pack accept a wolf or won't they? So that first meeting is extremely dangerous for a wolf to go outside of its pack and introduce itself to another pack, and it can result in their death. They're not always accepted. Wolves are very territorial. It makes them sound kind of mean, but they actually control their own numbers because of that. If you have, for example, in Yellowstone, they found that, you know, they've probably reached the capacity of the space here. So they found that the wolves actually would have more wolf conflict as they got to a certain number. So wolves control their own population, and also nature controls them for a lot of other reasons. But the I was surprised to find out how soon or how long ago wolves and dogs actually genetically diverted. We all say 10,000 years. That's not true. NOVA did a special on the wolf, and I was going to give you a link. I need to pull it up. But anyway, and it's 135,000 years that genetically they probably broke off. And the first domesticated dog is now thought to be in 14,000 BC in Germany. So it's much longer than 10,000 years. So the wolf really is a wild animal, and it didn't domesticate like the dog did. And I think many men have not forgiven it for that. You know, the dogs that came to the man and became, you know, submissive and humble and humbled themselves and wanted to be our servants versus the dog that stayed wild. Well, the dog that stayed wild seems to be persecuted. And I'm looking at the time till the break here.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. We definitely have a...
Anyway, so there is a lot to learn about what wolves and dogs have in common and what they have in differences.
Well, one thing that I do want to talk about when we come back from the break, Maureen, is the different howling sounds and tones. Like, dogs have so many. What was that again, Nicole?
I think like 10.
About 10 different types of sounds. Do you know how many different types of sounds, howls and barks and...
Well, that's the link I wanted, the direct link we need to get back to. But dogs do everything, wolves do everything dogs do, except the howl is definitely unique to the wolf. And the howl definitely fluctuates. And the howl, the lower the howl, the more aggressive the dog, the message, usually from the alpha male.
From the alpha male, and more messages about wolves and dogs to come after the break, Pet Appreciators.
Hi, I'm Dan Meckley, owner of It's a Pet's Life and itsapetslife.com, your local home for holistic pet food. If your pet is making frequent trips to the vet due to ear infections or paw chewing, the problem is often food allergies. Our staff will help you increase your pet's health and decrease those vet visits by selecting the best all-natural foods. Try us out at itsapetslife.com. We offer free delivery throughout the Twin Cities metro, and in many cases, we're cheaper than the outlets and box stores. Come down to our Plymouth store or go to itsapetslife.com.
Hello, Camille Collins here, inviting you to check out this month's digital edition of Scene Magazine, the premier Twin Cities gay entertainment guide, now online at MyScenCity.com. Sign up for the email blast, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and check in on Foursquare. Business owners, advertising with Scene Magazine is a great way to let the gay community know you support us. We offer exclusive content focusing on the Twin Cities gay scene. Stay informed with MyScenCity.com.
Hey, it's Jeff at the shop. Sounds like there's something wrong with your transmission. Hey, Jeff again. I hope I didn't scare you there. Turns out the boss's son just hasn't driven a stick shift before.
You got it, Jimmy.
Jeff here. Transmission is fine, but it looks like your clutch is broken. Have you had issues with it recently?
Heard enough of this? Go with the pros at PJW Automotive. Online at pjwauto.com. PJW Automotive, your neighborhood auto repair pro.
People say to me all the time, Mike, why does Ford need a guy like you when they got a guy like Jim Twitchell? Now, Jim, you've been with Ford now for how long?
24 years, thankfully.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Mike.
According to my notes here, Ford says the works can more than pay for itself. What does that mean?
The Works Fuel Saver package is an excellent value. It more than pays for itself in fuel economy by checking your tire pressures and by making sure that you have the proper grade of oil and making sure that everything is running and operating smoothly.
Get a great deal on service and save money on gas at your local Ford dealer. The Works Fuel Saver package includes an oil change, tire rotation, multi-point inspection, and more. Just $29.95 or less after $10 mail-in rebate.
So the position of my Ford dealership is saving money is good and saving gas is good, correct?
Correct.
And with the works, you get both?
You get both.
I love this. This is great. I'm going to get one. Where do I get them?
Get to your Ford dealer.
You heard it.
Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. Claim based on EPA averages. See participating Ford dealer or visit FordOwner.com for rebate details through 8/31/12.
This is Mike Papantonio from Ring of Fire. Ring of Fire is a smart, direct, and fearless progressive talk show. Join me, Mike Papantonio, along with my co-hosts Bobby Kennedy and Sam Cedar, as we take on the large corporate conglomerates and radical right-wing media that dominate America's airwaves. Help us fight the pollution, corruption, and censorship that threaten the future of this country. Ring of Fire, Saturdays from 4 to 7 and Sundays 6 to 9 p.m. only on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Welcome back to the Pet Connection Show here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And in studio today with Dr. Nicole and I is Dr. Maureen Hackett of HowlingWithWolves.org. And we are discussing actually just the relationship, the deep, deep genetic connection between wolves and dogs. But one thing that we were talking about before the break was just the different types of howls. And there's probably a wide variety. But Maureen, can you touch on three or four of those and what they mean? There's a lonesome howl, there's a more aggressive
howl. And there's a pup howl. The howl is truly unique to the wolf. I mean, we know that coyotes howl too, but you can actually, you really can hear the difference. There's more of a yapping with coyotes, but the howl in a wolf seems to be a locator for them and a communication of possibly even, it's not all understood, but for example, people used to think, oh, they howl and it's a socially bonding thing. Well, actually, some wolves would get punished for joining the howl because they were considered the lower level wolf and they're not supposed to howl. And they would have a fight after the howl. So there's all kinds of things about wolves that I don't think we completely understand, but we do know that wolves, when they're separated from their pack, will go to a familiar site and howl a lot to get the attention of their pack mates. But they if they howl too much, or if they howl in unfamiliar or strange places, which they do rarely, they risk that another pack of wolves, and they're afraid of other wolves. They have to be careful. Will know where they are, so they're careful about their vocalization. The pup will howl and howl out of pleasure, really, from the time it's born until about 6 months of age. And then after that, it starts to get really quiet with the rest of the pack as they're moving out of the familiar den area. And they get quieter because they know they're in strange territory. The alpha male will frequently, you know, vocalize. And if it's a confrontational situation or a aggressive, you know, stay away from our pack situation, it's a lower grumbly howl. And you can learn all about that on this, we found that link, a Nova link, all about wolves, which I thought was very interesting that the wolf really genetically broke off, or the dog broke off from the wolf, much longer ago than I had been led to believe, 135,000 years ago, not just 10,000 years. This is a truly wild animal. Also, the fact that man has domesticated dog, or dog domesticated with us, much longer ago than even 10,000 years. That in 14,000 BC, we have evidence in Germany of domesticated dogs helping hunters find the injured animal that they injured. So that the dog really has been an asset to mankind. If you think about everything the dog has done and does for us, we owe it to the wolves. I mean, if we had wiped out the wolves, you know, there's a possibility, obviously, we wouldn't have, they broke off so long ago, but if we took away their forebears, we wouldn't have such a great animal to be our companion and to help us with disabilities and, you know, finding Dutch elm disease and bombs and, you know, all these things that search animals do, search and rescue, and it's a great thing. And wolves, I think we owe it to the wolf for that. But there is a lot more about wolves that I'd love to talk about when you're ready.
Oh, sure. Actually, we have lots of questions too. And pet appreciators, if you have any questions or comments about wolves and the connection between on what we learn from wolves and the similarities between wolves and dogs, feel free to give us a call at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And one of the questions that I have is their family dynamics. You know, they live in a pack, just like dogs. But you also said that some of them will leave the pack. And I'm curious, is that a choice? Because the roles, maybe there's two dominant males and there's just not enough room for two? Or do they move on because they're they're just in search of, I don't want to say defining themselves. That sounds way too human. Do they move on because the what they bring as skills to the pack they recognize is already there, and so they go in search of another pack to be of use? Does that make sense?
Well, first of all, let's be clear. We wiped out wolves in the lower 48 in 1920s, 1930s. By 1970, we only had 600 wolves in Minnesota in the wild. So since 1970, our wolves have popped up to maybe 3,000. If you think about it, in 40 years, that's not a huge, huge, huge leap. And they've been stable. We haven't really had a chance to observe wolf behavior in the wild for very long, undisturbed by hunting and encroachment on their habitat and everything else that we as man have done to extirpate the wolf. So our knowledge is very limited. But what we do know is this. Wolves will live in a pack, and alpha, female, and male pretty much lead the pack. They'll decide, hey, everybody, get up. We're going hunting today. They'll take them on the long hunts looking for food. They make sure that the pack is fed, and they have one litter of pups per year. They estrus only once a year, and they won't have a pack if they can't feed them. They won't have a pack if they're under stress, or of litter, I mean. And the entire pack raises the litter. There's usually a second dominant female or a subdominant female also helping out. Sometimes, if they can, they'll have two litters, one with the dominant female, the alpha female, one with, at her choosing, with the other female. And they'll have two litters, but that's very unusual. Again, wolves limit their own numbers because they can't really even, in our day and age, in their broken up habitat, here in Minnesota, we think over half the pups die before 6 months of age. Mm-hmm. And that year on year, every adult, 35% of all the adult wolves die from all kinds of things. Car collisions. They're very unknowledgeable about cars and other, all kinds of human related causes, you know, habitat encroachment, things like that.
Where is their primary environment in Minnesota?
Well, it's northern Minnesota. They have come down from the original spot, which is in northeast in the Chippewa State Forest back in the 70s, and they have gradually moved south. My understanding, if you look at the map on the DNR website, the last time they were counted, we saw that they were coming in as occasionally into around Pine County, which is pretty far south, but otherwise it's north and northwest. I was just up in Red Lake, and they are studying wolves up there, and they described how the wolves have dropped in populations, you know, by snowmobiles, ATV access, things like that really affect wolves much more so than coyotes. But they have a dynamic where they have to break off from the pack for a lot of reasons. And one is a wolf needs a huge amount of landscape, a huge amount of, it can be broken up, but they need habitat in different areas to spread the genes so that they can resist the diseases that they all are exposed to. We immunize dogs. We don't immunize wolves, but wolves are exposed to the same diseases as dogs. They don't all die of these diseases. And in fact, so they need to spread these genes around. So you'll have maybe what would be an alpha female, a really good wolf, has to go off away from the pack where another alpha female already is in order to become an alpha female of another pack. Or you might have some young males the pack can't afford to feed. They've got to go off on their own and either live on their own or find some females and develop their own pack. And so our wolves in Minnesota, again, the last 600 or 700 in the whole lower 48, if you can believe that, we wipe them out. That's a lot of human killing. They got to Wisconsin. So there are about 800 wolves in Wisconsin, part of the Great Lakes population, but they're going to hunt them too. So it's kind of sad. We're going to just start decreasing that biodiversity, and a very important part of that is we learned that in the 1990s, the wolf pups were dying from parvovirus. But now they're not dying quite as much. So some resistance, some genetic variability happen, and so they're exposed. They're clearly have it along with other diseases. So we need that genetic biodiversity.
And diversity in pet discussion is always important. The more we learn about other pets or in other animals, I think the better we are as pet owners. Pet appreciators, stay with us through the break.
Warner Stallion has more Energy Star appliances for less. We are local, family-owned and operated appliance stores. Choose from all the best brands on the planet. And with Warner Stallion's best bottom line price guarantee, you'll save more. You also get free local delivery, professional installation, free recycling of replaced appliances, and up to 24 months, no interest financing. Experience what over 200,000 of your neighbors have. Make Warner Stallion your appliance specialist today.
Hey, boss, sounds like our server's on its last leg.
I don't hear anything. I was hoping this meant we were getting a lot of business.
Not if this server goes.
Options.
We could replace this one, but it would cost more than we spent in the first place.
What?
Actually, there's a new option, IP House. We could save a bunch of time by centralizing our administrative tasks. IP House has created a highly reliable server hosting platform that provides the best features of both public and private cloud hosting. We could use what we need and don't end up paying for what we don't.
Wow. I want to know more about this IP House.
See for yourself at iphouse.com.
iphouse.com, you say? I'll check it out right now!
If you're looking for a hosting solution tailored to your business, look no further than the locally owned IP House. Make an appointment with their friendly staff and find out how they can save you money while boosting the efficiency of your business. Call them at their office in Minneapolis or go online to iphouse.com. That's iphouse.com.
When I was little, I dreaded going to the dentist. The environment was cold and uninviting. Hi, I'm Dr. Jennifer DeChant, and at J&D Dental, we've created a warm and relaxing atmosphere. Many of our patients have told us it's the best dental experience they've ever had. We know that your smile is important to you, and we want you to know you are important to us.
Call today to set up an appointment at 612-332-0592 or check us out online at jnddental.com. J&D Dental, we'll give you something to smile about.
When you eat local Minnesota, you're not just supporting local business, you're sampling the best Minnesota has to offer. Many Eat Local restaurants use local and sustainable food, which supports the growers of our community, too. Whether you're looking for casual dining or searching for a very particular taste, you can find it all at eatlocalminnesota.com. Bookmark it now and have it ready later. It's great for a date or time out with the family. Go to eatlocalminnesota.com and discover great restaurants like these. Stop into Victor's 1959 Cafe for some revolutionary Cuban cooking. Sip on a delicious champagne mojito while you bite into a mouth-watering Cuban sandwich or the picadillo, enjoyed by Guy Fieri on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Victor's will make you feel like you've walked right into Havana, Cuba, 38th and Grand in South Minneapolis. The staff at Living Waters Market and Cafe strive to provide the healthiest local organic ingredients possible. Choose from smoothies, fresh juice, salads, sandwiches, bowls, and one of the best thin-crust pizzas in town with great vegetarian and gluten-free options. East of Shady Oak Road on Minnetonka Boulevard.
AM950 weather is brought to you by the Park Tavern. Mostly sunny today and hot. We'll see highs around 94. A few clouds rolling in tonight and we'll see a warm overnight low of 77. Tomorrow possibly getting up to 100 under sunny skies and expect it to be breezy. And there's a chance for rain and thunderstorms beginning Monday night lasting through Wednesday. For food and fun the whole family can enjoy, head out to the Park Tavern. Chef Patrick's Outdoor Patio Grill is open every Thursday during the summer. Located north of Highway 7 on Louisiana Avenue in St. Louis Park. More information at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Welcome back, Pet Appreciators. Welcome back to the Pet Connection Show. And if you are just joining us, we have Dr. Maureen Hackett in studio with Dr. Nicole and I discussing wolves, and their relation with dogs, etc. One of the things, though, that I did want to talk about was you mentioned genetics, and oftentimes people will look at like pugs or poodles or other types of breeds and say, how can this possibly be a connection to the wolves? So how do you explain that in the veterinarian field? And how do you explain that as a researcher, a marine and an advocate for these wolves and an expert in this area? How does that happen? How do you explain that?
Well, I think that's In my opinion, I think it's a little difficult to explain, especially like you said, when you look at a little pug, you know, how on earth did this animal become? But, you know, and I think just the long chain of genetics and everything that just that we've done, you know, to these animals to make them into certain breeds and things like that, I probably wouldn't be the best to discuss it. There'd probably be some wonderful fancy geneticist or something that would be much more, could provide us with much more depth on that.
Well, I was wondering just geography, too. I mean, were wolves possibly on every continent, you know, 135,000 years ago?
Yes.
And so, okay, so elaborate on that.
Well, I don't, I'm actually a physician. I'm not a dog okay. researcher. I'm an advocate for wolves because I think that we're going to lose a huge amount of ecological activity if we hunt these wolves. And that's why I'm working on this howlingforwolves.org. But we know that wolves were very much a part of almost every landscape throughout the world, and we wiped them out. Now, 135,000 years ago, genetically, they broke off the dog and the wolf. I don't know enough about that, but I do know that some of that hardwired behavior is really there. And I can't really say much more. I do know we have about 300 to 400 dog breeds now, and that's been over hundreds and hundreds of years that are of genetic tinkering that we've done with breeding. And but the wolves really need that diverse interbreeding, and that's why you'll see the wolves maybe in Yellowstone might, in my opinion, die out because they're on an island surrounded by hunting. And they're not going to be able to get that genetic input from the lone wolf coming in from maybe Idaho or from, you know, up in Canada, because they're killing them. They're just randomly killing good genes.
And that upsets me so much. Mm-hmm. But just so I don't continue to be so upset about this, I want to know.
Family.
Oh, it just drives me insane.
Well, let's go on the wipe family.
Wiping out of a species is just so, to me, unnecessary. And we have no clue as humans what their gifts are to us and what this, like the ecosystem, I think of the ecosystem. Are we fully aware of, as humans, the importance of every role every animal, insect, reptile, etc., plays in our ecosystem? Now, Dr. Marine, can you touch at all
yes.
on the ecosystem?
Yes. Well, that's the whole reason I really got into this, is what I learned and what the people at Yellowstone learned when they introduced the wolf in 1995. The wolf had been eliminated from Yellowstone in 1927.
Due to hunting.
Completely due to hunting. That's the whole reason the wolf has been extirpated, means wiped out by human means. That's what extirpation means. In 1927, the last wolf was killed. When you look at photographs of the Yellowstone River, as these riparian specialists did, the river was much healthier then. It didn't have this erosion. It had more trees, more middle-aged trees. And they found in the 1980s and 90s, there were no middle-aged trees. And once the wolf was reintroduced, within a very short period of time, 9 years, they noticed, hey, this river is not eroding as much. Well, the beaver have come back. We have not just two colonies, but 11 colonies of beaver. The temperature of the river's dropping. The fish population was getting better. The songbird population was getting better. So finally, they were able to demonstrate that the vegetation along the river was growing better and seemed to be growing better in areas where an ungulate, such as an elk, wouldn't be able to see a wolf, so it wouldn't hang out and graze so long. If it could see the wolf from a long distance away, it would graze more. So that was all wolf changing the ungulate behavior. Not even necessarily the numbers of elk, although they dropped a little because they were way overpopulated in Yellowstone. They had no natural predator. But they actually changed the behavior, and we call it the ecology of fear, and that is that the deer and the elk do not graze as long. They don't hang out in the easy-to-hunt places, which is what the hunters don't quite understand. When you have a wolf in the area, it's going to keep the deer more on the run, which is very good for the vegetation and the ecosystem, including the beaver. But the other aspect, which I found fascinating, is what's just recently been found about Lyme disease. Lyme disease is increased by 380% in Minnesota. That's
huge. From a Minnesota web-based
site? That just came out in the proceeding of the National Academy of Sciences, May 2012, just this May. Peer-reviewed, authored study out of the University of Wisconsin. And actually, this may have been out of the University of California, but there's another study out of the University of Wisconsin. And this has been articled in the Star Tribune, and you can find the links on our website. And it's being picked up, even the New York Times today picked up that, along with other ecological effects of what we do, affecting our public health and our infectious diseases. Lyme disease increased. We thought it was due to the deer, but actually, it's not just the deer. It's the rodent population and how we're affecting the predators on the rodents, such as mostly the red fox. And the wolf is tolerant of the red fox, but the coyote is not.
Are you able to make that connection? Because I hear rodents and red fox and wolves. And let's be real clear.
Let's be clear. Yeah. Wolves are tolerant of red foxes. Where wolves are, red foxes are.
Okay.
Coyotes are not. And neither is man. Man loves red fox fur and has trapped red fox. And we trapped 100,000 or more this year in Minnesota, red fox. Mm. And the red fox actually is a very efficient hunter of small rodents and pretty good around people. So it can live around people and get the rodents and not really be too, other than maybe an occasional cat, not be very hard to live with. But by having the coyote population, which we believe, at least a lot of researchers believe, has really sprung up because we wiped out the wolf. There are other reasons, too, probably. But we can't necessarily expect the wolf to be everywhere. We know that that's not going to be possible. But we know now that Lyme disease is probably more a reflection of our red fox population dropping than of our deer population increasing. This is what this really good research has shown. But more importantly, what we're finding is you know what? It doesn't just affect the ecosystem. It affects our infectious diseases. When we start perturbing, you know, landscape, and if you look at the New York Times article today in the Sunday Review, all about our infectious diseases and how they are affected by our ecology and what we do to our landscapes, including even in, you know, the Amazon and the release of certain viruses and all that interaction. So to randomly take out an entire species is a very dangerous thing for our environment, but also for our health, our actual infectious diseases.
Well, and if you think these species have been around for hundreds of, you know, thousands and thousands of years.
I know. And you know what I find fascinating is that man came of this earth. I mean, we'll put religion aside, but it's not like we were dropped here from some other planet. We came of this earth. We share the DNA. We share the biological functions of so many other species that we have evolved with. So we must have some interdependency. And we need to really understand that. And maybe many cultures have incorporated that. For example, the Anishinaabe, the Ojibwe, they believe the wolf as sacred. They revere it as their brother. They feel they have to live separate, but leave the wolf alone. And they see the wolf as representing humility. And they respect it for that. The wolf stays away from mankind, but it does its job out there. And they believe, too, that their fates are interwoven, that when the wolf is persecuted, they are persecuted. And that when the wolf does poorly, they do poorly. And if you think about it, in 1899, there were bounties on wolves. They made it a patriotic act to go and kill wolves all over the United States. Well, what was happening to the Indians?
Exactly. Exactly. And I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
Okay. All right. Okay. So are there any other significant points that you'd like to bring up about the ecosystem and human health?
Well, I think you have to think about water. You know, if the Yellowstone River, where there was no hunting happening, no perturbation from a lot of things, and it was experiencing erosion, what is going to happen to our wetlands, which our ecosystem in northern Minnesota is an extreme amount of wetlands. Now, we have ranchers there, too. We would say not too many, but they experience some wolf predator problems. Non-lethal predator control could do two things. One is keep the wolf in the ecosystem and discourage it from the easy kill. And keep our, you know, right now we have this population of deer that is affecting our red pine, that is affecting a lot of trees that really need to grow so that we have clean water. So that's one issue that really needs to be emphasized about the wolf. And the other thing is we need to figure out ways of living with these creatures and animals without necessarily exterminating them or killing them, unless we absolutely have to, because there is a value and something we can learn. And there's also a value to having our relationships with our neighbors, such as the Anishinaabe tribes. It's so demoralizing to go and kill an animal that they actually revere. But one thing that Minnesota has not done, and it's something that my organization is going to come forward with, is non-lethal predator control, which is very interesting because it involves dogs. It involves these very specialized dogs that are intimidating to wolves and used in the mountainous areas out in Europe where they had had wolves and sheep herders for 10,000 years. For 10,000 years, these sheep herders in the Carpathian Mountains have lived with the wolves and the bears and not exterminated them, and probably are healthier for it. They probably don't have the Lyme disease and everything else. The other thing I'd want to touch on about wolves and humility, the reason they represent humility to the Anishinaabe, one of the reasons is they feed their young first, always, and they never have an orphan. If there's a pup that does not have parents for some reason or a pack, they will adopt it. They are, and if you think about it, the dog probably has developed its submission to the human based on originating from the wolf, not the cat.
Interesting facts. You did touch on something that I want to come back to, and that is using dogs to help control in a non-lethal way wolf population or wolf more dangerous.
Predation.
Yes. And pet appreciators, this is somewhat related, but I came across something on the internet today too, and this is actually about the Canada goose. And oftentimes there's significant population problems with them as well. But you said, Maureen, that dogs are now being used to control wolves. Well, there is this company in Connecticut that specially trains border collies to crowd control Canada geese as well. So pet appreciators, our dog friends are out there in the world internationally doing all kinds of good work. We're coming up on another break, actually, pet appreciators, and we would love it if you would stay with us. More info to follow. Thank you.
At Mazopia, a natural food market, our mission is simple. We are working to support a healthy, sustainable community, environmentally, economically, and socially. And we try to meet that goal by focusing on products that are locally produced and locally sourced. Eating locally produced food has a long list of benefits. It keeps resources within our local community and gives farmers a reason to responsibly farm their land rather than developing it. Eating locally also reduces your carbon footprint because food doesn't have to travel far to get to you. Local produce is also healthier for you because it's picked and sold at the peak of ripeness, when it's at its highest nutritional value, and when it tastes the best. Mazopia has a fantastic produce section that features as many local products as possible. Mazopia is located in Prior Lake, across from the Mystic Lake Casino Hotel. Find more information by visiting us online at www.mazopia.com. Welcome to healthy living. Welcome to Mazopia. Mazopia is owned and operated by the Shakopee, Mittawakaton Sioux community.
Jessica wishes for shelter for herself and Olivia, her six-week-old premature baby. Reggie, her boyfriend, strangled Jessica and threatened to kill her. She sought safety in a homeless shelter, but was turned away because the living environment was too harsh for baby Olivia. She left the house with just 3 bottles of formula and is reluctant to visit the local church for a free meal because Reggie will look for her there. Luckily, the Domestic Abuse Project was there to fulfill Jessica's wishes with resources from our emergency fund. DAP receives a limited amount of money annually from government agencies for the emergency fund to help women in crisis. That money is depleted in only 6 months, leaving DAP to make difficult decisions on which women need our help the most. Make it possible for DAP to say yes to every woman in crisis. Help DAP replenish the emergency fund and ensure we can support the next Jessica. Please visit domesticabuseproject.org to learn more about DAP and to make an investment in safe and loving families.
Common Good Books has found a new home in St. Paul. Visit their new location on Grand and Snelling by the McAllister College campus. This larger and sunnier location offers an expanded selection of titles and opens opportunities for Common Good Books to bring in more of your favorite authors and speakers from around the world. Visit the friendly folks at Common Good Books, now at Snelling and Grand in St. Paul. As always, you can still find them online at commongoodbooks.com.
Samba Taste of Brazil offers you delicious Brazilian fusion dishes that bring you amazing flavor. From 11 to 3, try their traditional Brazilian lunch special, Surf Bass, starting under $8. Their dinner menu specializes in Brazilian meats and seafood, made with authentic ingredients and complemented with a great wine selection. Friday and Saturday evenings, enjoy live music and shop Samba's traditional Brazilian grocery store. Samba Taste of Brazil, 10th and Main Street in downtown Hopkins. More at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Pet Appreciators, do you remember a few weeks ago I brought up an award contest from the American Humane Association, and they give out what they call Hero Dog Awards, and there's 8 categories, and so you could submit, you know, your entries into these different 8 categories, and these 8 categories are military dog, guide dog, law enforcement or arson dog, hearing dog, search and rescue dog, service dog, therapy dog, and then the emerging hero dog, which is just your everyday neighborhood hero. And I just wanted to let you know that that award is, or that contest is narrowing down. They've picked one dog from each one of those categories, and now the public, the online public, so to speak, can go to their website and get its American Humane Association. This is their award, Hero Dog Awards, and you can go and vote. And so I would strongly encourage people doing that. The online voting ends on midnight, October 5th. And so we definitely have a lot of time. But Pet Appreciators, those of you with children or no children or teachers, this might be a really great learning experience to do that with your child. To, you know, create more awareness of how dogs are so important to our society, so important to our relationships. And it might be just a great thing to do with your child. So just a little tidbit there. But I do want to get back to our very intense conversation here with Dr. Maureen Hackett and wolves. And you were talking, and I would love to end on a positive note about some of the many, many ways you are suggesting on a local level and a national level to be able to deal with wolf populations and conflicts between wolves and the wolf and humans in a nonviolent way. So go ahead, Maureen.
Okay. First of all, we have to say that wolves don't attack humans. Wolves are very afraid of humans and stay away from humans. They don't tolerate roads. They don't tolerate snowmobile noise or anything like that. They do go for an easy meal if they can and if they're desperate. And so what I'm concerned with the random hunting is that the good hunters will be killed, leaving their pups or their less good hunter pack mates desperate, and more depredation could happen. And the problem, I know for sure after participating in lobbying to stop this hunt, that basically this hunt is considered, quote, conservative the first year. But they're going to see how many depredation events happen and then increase the quota, believing somehow that the hunt will help depredation. Depredation is the killing of livestock by a wolf. The reality is the more you leave the wolf intact and just deal with the problem wolves, you actually keep those wolves in the ecosystem and away from man better. That is being shown more and more. If you continue to randomly hunt wolves, you keep them desperate in terms of pups or younger ones will go for an easier meal or have to go less further away if there's only one adult in the pack to feed the younger pack mates. Also, you don't want to have to have them at a higher reproduction level because the most protein is in the first 2 years of life. That's when they need more protein. So a random hunt may even hurt farmers. The actual incidence of depredation is considered quite low in Minnesota, but the farmers tend to blame the wolf for wild dog and coyote kills too. And we have a system set up that they get reimbursed for a kill by a wolf after the fact, and they don't get reimbursed or provided with non-lethal or non-killing methods of controlling wolves.
Wait a minute. Who gets reimbursed and by who?
The farmers get reimbursed. It used to be by the United States Department of Agriculture and per U.S. Fish and Game Wildlife because it was considered a protected federal species. So the farmers were reimbursed by the feds, and there was maybe a pass-through of the money from the DNR. The DNR here in Minnesota was instructed per the wolf management plan, and this is why there was going to originally be a 5-year wait in addition to many other things, to get some non-lethal predator control methods in place. They encourage them, but I've spoken to a sheep herder, and she uses the non-lethal control methods of dogs, electrified fencing, and techniques. And she said she's never been given any assistance for that money-wise, and it is more expensive to do the right thing. And so my organization, along with several national organizations, I do have at least one firm verbal commit from Natural Resources Defense Council to develop a pilot program and just literally offer it to the farmers. And whoever takes it up, I want them to be the example, you know. And I especially want to hope for some particularly politically active cattleman to take this up. Because I've had people, in particular a rancher out west whose family was in ranching since 1870, who's dropped his depredation levels to zero in Montana and in Alberta using these large dogs. And we'll talk about these dogs. There are many species, but they mostly come from mountainous regions where they had wolves in Europe. And you have to use several of them. And depending on the kind of situation you have will be depend on the kind of dog that you want. But they can use those, and they corral the sheep in at night so they're closer together and easier to for the dogs to guard. And they use electrified fencing. And if you do those three things, I was told by the sheep herder that you can get it down to zero. And you're also protecting them from coyotes and any other wild dogs, too, when you do that. And then the wolf doesn't get such a bad rap, because a lot of this happens from coyotes. And the wolf really, especially the sheep herder, she kind of made note that, I haven't had many wolves, but I have a lot of coyotes. But if you go up in other areas, they have a lot of wolves, but not many coyotes. So, you know, it is kind of the opposite. But we could put that in place and just, you know, try that before we start randomly hunting, because we're not even going to have a count before this hunt. They haven't even counted the wolves since 2007. We don't have any data on how many wolves are going to be killed, because now by law people can kill them much easier because they're not under the Federal Endangered Species Act. We're not even going to assess that. So that was why I jumped in and wanted to fight for the wolf. But now I want to offer something too, and offer a non-lethal predator control program. It'll help them with coyotes too, but that'll help the wolf's reputation.
Exactly. Now, are there breeders here in Minnesota that you've contacted that would be able to be part of this pilot program
that
you're supporting?
Or? That's the next step. Keep your ears and eyes open. Call in if you're a breeder of these dogs.
And the specific breeds?
Well, the woman I spoke to, her name is Janet, and she's in Pine County. She uses a combination, and she says her combination is unusual, of half Spanish Mastiff and half Polish Patra. And she said, really, a lot of these breeds are very similar, but you want to make sure you have to get the right breed for the situation. She chose that breed because they're not so aggressive that they'll chase hikers and bikers. They're not so aggressive that they'll chase a wolf across a road. And she wanted that. But she said, you know, in the Carpathian Mountains with the sheep herders where they don't have to worry about that, they'll have a much more aggressive dog. And then she was saying that the Great Pyrenees in some places has become too domesticated. But those are her opinions. But she's an expert at it, and she has many dogs to talk about and uses them. She has a great idea of having a dog SWAT team, that in addition to having those pieces in place on a cattleman's area, is to have one dog SWAT team available to loan out to a farm that's having trouble. And she said, if you can keep a farm locked down for 3 weeks, the wolves will go away, which is different than the coyote. They don't go away, but the wolves will go away and move on.
One thing that I've taken from your last few comments, Maureen, is creativity. You know, in the animal world, whether they're domesticated or free, there's a phenomenal amount of creativity and how we can, you know, use those ideas to make our living environments better for everybody. Maureen, you have made our show great today. We want to thank you so much for joining us and giving us a different perspective on how we look at our pets.
Jack Rice for Calhoun Beach Club. You know what? I'm a swimmer. Well, I'm really a controlled drowner, but I try to be a swimmer. The beauty of the Calhoun Beach Club is they have the indoor pool, which I use regularly, but they also have one of the most beautiful outdoor pools I have ever seen. It's the view that I love. It's the fact that I can be in it. I can look up. I can see the skyline of Minneapolis. I can see Lake Calhoun. It's extraordinary. You want to check out both of them. Go online at CalhounBeachFitness.com. Mention AM 950 and get a free 3-day pass.